Carl Jacoby carried Sarah's luggage as she walked down Main Street until they came to a white clapboard building with a sign next to the front door that read Rogers Boarding House. A rotund woman wearing a white apron sprinkled with flour answered the door. She was wiping her hands on a cup towel and looking angry at being interrupted.
Yes?
Hello. My name is Sarah Johnson. Mrs. Sally Jensen referred me to you. She said you rent rooms to young single ladies.
Well, howdy, Sarah. My name is Melissa Rogers, but everyone here calls me Mama. Come on in.
Sarah took the hand, which seemed as big as a ham, and shook it as she entered the door.
You can just put the luggage down here in the parlor, boy.
Carl Jacoby grimaced at the term boy, but he kept his mouth shut as he unloaded the suitcase and valise. Sarah stepped over to him and handed him a bit of change from her purse as if she were tipping a stranger for carrying her bags for her. With her back to Mama Rogers, she mouthed the words, "I'll see you later." After Sarah told Mrs. Rogers the very same lie about her reasons for coming to Big Rock as she'd told Sally, Mama showed her up to a room on the second floor overlooking Main Street.
I'm sorry about this room, Sarah. It's mighty noisy on weekends when the local cowboys are in town celebrating, but it's the last one I have available. And you do catch a nice breeze through the window.
Sarah stepped to the window and peered out. In her mind, she could see herself taking careful aim with a rifle down at Smoke Jensen as he passed on the street below. It wouldn't be as gratifying as looking into his eyes as she killed him, but it would do for a backup plan in case she wasn't able to get him alone long enough to do it face to face. She turned back around to Mama, smiling, all traces of her murderous thoughts gone from her innocent visage.
Oh, this room will do nicely, Mama, and I do like the view of Main Street.
An hour later, after she'd unpacked her luggage and paid Mama Rogers for the first 2 weeks, she asked about a good place to eat.
Well, you're welcome to eat here most nights, but if you need a place to have a good home-cooked meal at lunch or breakfast, you can't beat the Sunset Cafe over on 2nd Street.
Thank you. I think I'll take a walk around town and get acquainted with my new home.
After she left Mama Rogers' place, she stepped into the hotel where Carl had told her he was staying and left a note with the desk clerk telling him where to meet her. 30 minutes later, after walking around doing some sightseeing, she joined Carl Jacoby and Daniel Macklin at the Sunset Cafe on 2nd Street. It was past lunchtime and before dinner time, and so the place was practically deserted, which was just fine with Sarah, because she didn't want too many people to see her conversing with the two new men in town.
Hello, Daniel.
Howdy, Sarah. See you made the trip all right.
Carl, who was bursting with curiosity about her earlier comments about Mrs. Jensen, butted in.
Now, what's all this about you and Smoke Jensen's wife becoming such good friends on the train?
What?
Sarah told the two men what had happened on the train.
You were taking an awful big chance talking to Mrs. Jensen like that.
Yeah, our friend Carl here seems to have come up with a sudden lack of courage where it comes to Smoke Jensen.
Sarah raised her eyebrows and gave Carl a questioning look.
Well, Carl, for your information, I didn't know whose wife she was when we struck up a conversation, and after she told me she was married to Smoke Jensen, I couldn't very well just get up and leave now, could I?
I guess not.
Now, what's this Mackie saying about you being afraid of Smoke Jensen?
Look, that's not true. It's just that everything I see and hear about this man don't fit with a picture of a back shooter or a man who'd kill someone without giving him a fair chance.
So now you're an expert on Smoke Jensen and you think that what he did when he shot my brother and your friend was all right?
That's not what I'm trying to say, Sarah. It's just that I don't think it went down like everybody in Puebla seems to say it did.
Yeah, Sarah. Carl here thinks this Jensen is so quick with a handgun. He could draw and put 5 or 6 slugs in Johnny and his friends before they could even get a shot off, even though they already had their guns out.
Is that really what you think, Carl?
Carl nodded, leaning forward and putting his elbows on the table as if by getting closer to her, he could make her believe what he was saying.
You gotta see him draw to believe it, Sarah. The man is as fast as greased lightning.
So was Johnny, Carl. You know that.
No, Johnny wasn't in Jensen's class, Sarah. Johnny was quick, all right, but Jensen is as fast as I've ever seen, bar none.
Now it was Sarah's face that flushed as she leaned across the table toward Carl until their faces were inches apart.
Well, it really doesn't matter, does it? Whatever happened that day in Pueblo Smoke, Jensen put lead in my brother and then he walked away like it never happened. And for that, we're going to kill him. Unless you really have lost your nerve like Max says you have.
Now you're talking, Sarah. I say we go look for him and get this over with right now.
Jacoby didn't answer her accusation. He just looked at her with lovesick eyes, knowing he'd probably lost any chance for her to ever think of him in a favorable way again. Sarah shook her head, a thoughtful expression on her face.
No, Mac. I want this done right. When I put the fatal bullet in Smoke Jensen's heart, I want to be looking in his eyes while I do it. And that is going to take some planning.
Sarah, you can't be serious. Look, Carl's right about one thing. From what everybody around here says, Jensen is snake quick on the draw. You wouldn't have a chance going up against a man like Jensen face to face.
Not if he didn't know I was coming after him.
After Sarah finished her meal and left the cafe, warning the boys not to approach her in public but to leave a message in the mail slot at her boarding house when they needed to speak, Macklin shook his head.
That little filly's gonna get in a world of trouble the way she's going after Jensen.
Jacoby, who had to struggle whenever he was around Sarah not to let his feelings for her show, nodded in agreement.
Yeah, and if anything happens to her while we're supposed to be watching out for her, her old man'll have our hides nailed to his barn door before the week is out.
Macklin leaned back in his chair and slipped the Colt from his holster. He held the gun down out of sight from the waitress and opened the loading gate, checking the cylinders to make sure the pistol was fully loaded.
What the hell are you doing, Mac?
I'm getting ready to save Sarah and do what the old man McDougal sent us here to do in the first place. Kill Jensen. For Sarah has a chance to get herself hurt trying that damn fool plan of hers.
Oh, you're crazy, Mac. I done told you that you won't stand a chance against Jensen. He's too damn fast for you or me to handle. Heck, I don't think we'd have a snowball's chance in hell if we drew on him at the same time.
Hell, Carl, I didn't say I was going to challenge him to a duel face to face. There's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say.
You're not going to backshoot him, are you?
No, but I'm not going to give him much warning either. I'll just walk up to him when he's not expecting any trouble and hook and draw.
But you'll be arrested and hung.
Nah, cause as soon as I fire, I'm going to hightail it out of there and be on my horse riding out of town before he hits the floor.
Well, you just might have a chance.
Macklin slid his six gun into its holster and then got to his feet.
Now, let's go see if we can find Jensen.
Smoke was finishing his second cup of coffee at the breakfast table while Sally stood behind him, kneading his shoulders.
Well, sir, how does it feel to be back from the wilds of Canada working as a boring old married rancher instead of as an intrepid explorer risking life and limb to carve a railroad out of remote wilderness?
Intrepid? Now that's a new one on me. I suppose that means incredibly handsome and desirable?
No, sir, it certainly does not mean that. It means fearless, very brave.
To tell you the truth, lady, if I hadn't had you to come home to, I just might have stayed up there in the Canadian mountains. They reminded me of the way it was out here 20 years ago, before all the pilgrims came from back east and spoiled it all.
So, you gave all that up for little old me?
Oh, I don't know about how little anymore.
Are you insinuating I gained weight while I was visiting my parents? That my hips are suddenly too big?
No, dear. Of course not. I was just teasing.
That does it, Smoke Jensen. I'm going to go on a diet right away.
No, sweetheart.
Smoke knew from past experience that when Sally dieted, everyone dieted. It was not a pleasant experience by any means. She turned her back to him and began fussing with the leftover biscuits and sausage patties on the counter.
You'd better get a move on, Smoke. Burley said there were lots of supplies you needed to go and get from town.
Smoke got up from the table and put his guns on. As he got ready to leave, he walked over and put his arms around her from behind, holding her breasts as he leaned down to kiss the back of her neck.
You don't need to diet, darling. You've got the best figure in the territory.
Or at least the biggest.
Smoke rode his big Palouse stud while Cal and Pearlie rode in the buckboard. Pearlie, after talking to the men he'd left in charge while they went on their jaunt up to Canada, found they were in dire need of several rolls of wire, some nails, and various other assorted supplies to make the repairs that always seemed to be necessary to keep a ranch in good order.
I got some bad news, boys.
What's that?
Sally thinks she's getting fat, so she's going to go on a diet.
What?
Pearlie remembered the last time Miss Sally went on a diet. He'd about to turn into a rabbit. They'd eaten so many salads and greens and carrots.
Oh, please don't tell me that, Smoke. I was just getting used to having her home cooking again. I don't know if I could stand to go back to eating all them greens again.
Yeah, you and me both, pal.
They pulled up in front of the general store. When they entered, Carl saw what he thought was the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen in his life behind the counter. Her hair was long and fell down over her shoulders and framed a face that belonged to an angel.
Hello, sir. What can I get for you?
Hello, miss. You must be Sarah Johnson.
Do I know you, sir?
I didn't mean to give offense, Miss Johnson. It's just that my wife, Sally Jensen, said she met you on the train the other day, and she told me to tell you hello when we got here.
Sarah's eyes stayed hard for a moment, and then she made a conscious effort to soften her expression.
Oh, of course. You must be Mr. Jensen.
Yes, I am. But my friends just call me Smoke.
Sarah forced her eyes off Smoke, lest she give away the hatred she felt for him.
And who are these gentlemen with you, Mr. Smoke?
This is Calvin Woods, and the skinny one over there is my ranch foreman, Pearlie.
Sarah nodded her head at Pearlie and smiled demurely at Cal, causing the boy to blush furiously.
Are you here alone?
Yes. Mr. and Mrs. Jackson took the morning off to take their children on a picnic.
Sarah glanced over at Cal, who was still standing there staring at her with his mouth half open.
Mr. Jackson said he might even do a little fishing on the creek up north of town Mrs. Jackson will be in later.
They must trust you very much to leave the store in your hands all alone.
Yes, sir, I guess they do.
Cal was almost stumbling over his feet since he seemingly couldn't take his eyes off Sarah. The boy just stood there staring.
If you don't mind, partner, I'd like to put these down when you're finished gawking.
Cal whirled around, his face bright red. He leaned forward and thrust his face out.
I ain't gawking, Pearlie, and don't you dare say I am.
Calvin, do you want me to add those things you're holding?
Cal turned back around and put his supplies on the counter.
Yes, ma'am. But everybody just calls me Cal.
Sarah smiled, forgetting for the moment her hatred of Smoke Jensen and everyone who worked for him. Cal was very cute, she thought, and he seemed so shy. She just wanted to grab him and cuddle him like a little puppy. Her soft mood was ruined when Smoke stepped up to the counter.
Just put it on the sugarloaf bill, if you would, Sarah.
When she nodded, not looking at him for fear her hatred would show in her eyes, Smoke and Cal and Pearlie began to pick up the supplies and carry them out to the buckboard in front of the store. Once the wagon was fully loaded, Smoke climbed up on his horse and inclined his head toward Lewis Longmont's saloon.
Why don't we grab some lunch over at Lewis's?
You don't have to ask me twice. Though we'd better save some room for Miss Sally's bear sign. She told me yesterday she was going to cook up a batch today.
I wouldn't count on that, Pearlie.
Smoke spurred his horse toward Lewis's saloon.
Oh, that's right. You said Miss Sally was fixing to go on one of her diets. Now, what in blazes could make Miss Sally think she was getting too fat?
Well, to tell the truth, it's my fault.
What do you mean?
Well, this morning I was fooling around and I teased her that she wasn't as light as she used to be.
Oh, no. Don't tell me you was fool enough to say something like that to a woman.
Yep.
Damn. You remember the last time Miss Sally got to feeling fat? She didn't cook no biscuits, no bear sign, no pancakes for near about 2 months. Greens and carrots and vegetables was all we had to eat, and I swear I about had to threaten the hands with my six gun to keep them on the job till she got over that foolishness.
I remember. Maybe this time she won't stay on it too long.
Yeah, maybe pigs will learn to fly too.
I guess old Pearly be finding lots of reasons to come to town. Remember last time, Smoke? He came to town at least every 2 or 3 days so he could eat at Lewis's.
It's the only way I could keep my weight up enough to keep my pants from falling down around my ankles.
Yeah, and you spend just about all your wages on food. So when you needed a new pair of boots, you had to borrow the money from me.
As the three men entered Lewis Longmont's saloon, Daniel Macklin and Carl Jacoby watched him from an alley up the street.
Now's my chance.
You're not going to try for him in Longmont, are you? Well, he's in there with all his friends. You won't stand a chance.
No, I'm going to take him in there. I'm going to wait until he comes out of the bat wings. His eyes won't be used to the brightness and he'll be half blind for a minute or two. That's when I'm going to pole iron on him. Once he's down, I'll jump on my horse and hightail it toward Pueblo.
Well, how will you know when he's coming out? You just can't stand around in a doorway and wait. Someone will see you and get suspicious. Hell, you might even get arrested for loitering.
You're right. I know. I'll go in and have me a beer or two at the bar. When I see Jensen getting up to leave, I'll walk out right ahead of him. And when he comes through the bat wings, I'll be waiting for him out front.
Macklin turned to Jacoby and stuck out his hand.
I know you don't much agree with me on this, but it's the only way I can think of to keep Sarah from getting herself hurt by trying to do it by herself. Besides, I owe it to Johnny and our other friends. He cut down to do something about it.
I know. And once you're gone, I'll explain it to Sarah and send old man McDougal a wire telling him you're on your way. Good luck, Mac.
Jacoby didn't really think he'd have to wire Angus that Macklin was on his way, for he knew as sure as shooting that Macklin was going to die this day. Jensen hadn't survived this long by letting men surprise him outside saloons. Lewis was laughing at Smoke's description of how life was going to be on the Sugarloaf with Sally on a diet.
You know, fellas, dieting seems to make women cranky, and when Mama's not happy, nobody's happy. I just can't believe it. I come back from 6 months out in the wilderness, eating with mountain men and trappers, and you have no idea just how bad that can be. And then I come home and say something stupid and kill any chance I have of getting something good to eat for a change.
Well, my friend, from what you told me, it's your own fault she feels like she has to lose weight.
I know. Why couldn't I keep my big mouth shut? I was just teasing. Hell, Sally isn't fat. In fact, she's trim compared to most other women her age.
Now hold on, Smoke Boy. Don't tread on that snake.
What do you mean?
A woman is even more concerned with age than with weight, so don't ever say a woman of your age to Sally. In fact, for you to make such a grievous mistake, I predict you'd not only not be eating, you'd not be doing anything else with Sally for quite some time, if you get my drift.
Yeah, I know. Sleeping in the bunkhouse. Wouldn't be the first time, either.
Just then, Smoke noticed a tall, heavy-set man at the bar watching him while trying not to show it. Years of living as a fugitive from some untrue wanted posters had taught Smoke to listen to his instincts, and they were screaming at him to be careful of this man. While the others at the table gave Andre their orders, Smoke leaned back in his chair, extended his right leg under the table, and unhooked the rawhide hammer thong on his right-hand Colt. Whenever he glanced in the cowboy's direction, he noticed the man was sweating up a storm, though the temperature in the saloon was mild and cool. He'd seen this kind of behavior before, mainly when some young buck had bragged to his friends that he could take the famous gunfighter Smoke Jensen, and then they'd had the effrontery to call him on it. They usually sweated like a pig until they finally either got up the nerve to actually try their hand or ran out in the alley and puked their guts out. He hoped this man was a puker instead of a caller. He had no desire to kill anyone today, especially someone he didn't even know. While Cal and Pearlie and Lewis reminisced over some of their adventures of the previous 6 months in Canada, Smoke kept his attention riveted on the man at the bar, but he did it so the man didn't know he'd been seen. The other thing Smoke noticed that made him even more certain the cowhand was up to something was the fact that the man nursed one beer for almost 30 minutes, not ordering another, but not leaving the bar either. In Smoke's experience, men at a bar either drank continually or they left. They didn't stand around sneaking looks while they sipped the beer until it was warm and flat. Once the meal was served, Lewis, who was almost as experienced in the ways of the gun as Smoke was, leaned over.
What's going on, my friend?
What do you mean?
I've been watching the man at the bar, and he seems inordinately interested in you and what you're doing. Do you recognize him? Perhaps someone you've come across before, or someone who perhaps has a grudge against you for some reason or other?
No. Not that that means much. He could be a relative of someone I've had trouble with, or he could be a young gun looking to get a reputation the quick way. I just don't know.
No, I don't think he's a gunny. He has the look of a working cowboy to me. Not someone who's riding the Owl Hoot Trail. In fact, his gun is old and worn and his boots are dirty. This man is no gunslick out to make a name for himself. He doesn't dress well enough.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But he sure is hell on the prod for me, for whatever reason.
Well, what are you going to do about this impasse we find ourselves in, partner? You're not going to let him pick the time and place, are you?
No, you're right, Lewis. That wouldn't be very smart.
Since he didn't know if the man had friends waiting outside, Smoke looked around the table until he had Cal and Pearlie's attention.
Boys, keep your gun hands empty and keep a watch on the door for me. There's a gent over at the bar that's been eyeing me, and I'm going to go over there and have a talk with him. Watch my back in case he's got friends outside.
You got it, boss.
Smoke got up from the table. Before the man at the bar could move, Smoke turned and walked directly toward him. As he approached, Smoke noticed sweat dripping from under the man's hat and running down the sides of his face. When he dropped his gaze to the man's right hand, he saw it had a fine tremor in it. The man was definitely on edge, and Smoke knew such men, though rarely effective, were still extremely dangerous because one never knew what they were going to do. Smoke walked up and stood at the bar next to the man, facing forward with his elbows on the bar and his chin in his hand while he watched him in the mirror behind the bar.
What do ye want?
Well now, that's exactly the question I was fixing to ask you, friend.
What do you mean by that?
You've been watching me for the past half hour, and you've been sweating like a racehorse. So I thought I'd just end the suspense and come over here and introduce myself. I'm Smoke Jensen.
I know who you are, Jensen.
Do you have some business with me?
Well, I don't do business with killers and murderers.
Well, I have to admit, I've killed some men in my day, though I've never murdered anyone. And those I've killed have all tried to kill me first.
That's a lie!
Now, ordinarily, friend, a man who spoke to me in that tone, with those words, would either be flat on his back with a busted jaw, or he'd be bleeding all over the floor. However, you've obviously got something weighing heavily on your mind that concerns me, so I'll hold off on taking any offense for now. You want to tell me what you got stuck in your craw, mister? I didn't get your name.
The man reached into his vest pocket and pulled out a couple of coins and threw them on the bar.
Not yet, Jensen, but when I'm ready, you'll know. And the name's Macklin. Daniel Macklin.
Smoke stepped away from the bar.
Well, we can settle this right now if that's what you really want.
Yeah, with your friends over there all set to gun me down if I make a play? Yeah, no thanks.
My friends won't interfere if it's a fair fight.
That's not the way I hear it, Jensen. In fact, I hear they usually take a hand and join right in when you kill someone.
Mister, I don't know what you're getting at or where you get your information, but I'm telling you flat out that's a lie, and I'm willing to back my words up any way you choose. Are you?
Macklin let his hand drop to his side, and before he could blink, Smoke's Colt was in his hand, cocked and pointing at his chest from a distance of 2 inches. Macklin's face turned pale and he took a step back. He'd never seen anything like it. He hadn't even seen Jensen's hand move before it was holding a gun.
You gonna shoot me down in cold blood too, Jensen?
I still don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll be sure to remind you the next time we meet.
Smoke watched him leave the saloon, and then he went back to the table and took his seat.
You find out what he wanted?
No. But he's got a powerful hate for me going on. Seems to think me and my friend shot someone close to him down in cold blood.
Where'd he get that crazy idea?
He wouldn't say.
You don't think it's about that fracas we had up in Pueblo, do you?
No, I don't see how anyone could think we were the aggressors in that fight.
Well, like you say, he's got a powerful hate on. I could see it in his eyes.
Yeah, I'd sure watch my back if I was you, Smoke. A man as pissed off as that man is ain't gonna think twice about shooting you in the back.
Carl Jacoby, who was watching the doorway to Longmont Saloon from an alley down the street, was astonished when Dan Macklin walked hurriedly out of the bat wings, jumped on his horse, and hightailed it around the far corner onto a back street leading to their hotel. His back was stiff and he didn't even glance behind him as he rode away like his pants were on fire. Carl had been expecting some fireworks from Macklin, but he hadn't heard any gunshots, and there didn't seem to be a crowd forming or anyone coming out of the door looking for Macklin. Couldn't have been much of a gunfight with this little reaction.
I'll be damned.
He turned and walked quickly up the alley toward the hotel's back entrance, hoping to find Macklin and find out what had gone on in the saloon. He could tell something had happened from the way Macklin looked as he rode down the street, but he could not imagine what it could be. When he got to the rear of the hotel, he saw Macklin's horse tied to a hitching rail there and the back door partially open. He went inside and stopped as he passed the doorway to the hotel bar when he saw Macklin standing at the bar with a bottle of whiskey in front of him and a glass to his lips. Jacoby moved next to him at the bar, noticing his face was flushed and he was covered with sweat. His hand holding the glass was shaking so much that Jacoby was afraid Macklin would spill it all over himself if he tried to drink from it. Without speaking, Jacoby took the whiskey bottle, poured himself a small drink, and stood there as he sipped, waiting for Macklin to speak, wondering just what the hell had happened to shake his friend up so.
Carl, you were right about Jensen. I ain't seen nothing like that in all my born days.
What happened in there, Mac?
I think the man must have eyes in the back of his head. I followed him and his friends into the saloon, and I took up a station at the bar and commenced to drink me a beer while I kept a lookout on him out of the corner of my eye. He must have noticed me watching him or something, because he come over to the bar where I was standing, and, well, he braced me.
What do you mean?
He asked me what it was I wanted, and when I didn't exactly answer his question, and I accidentally let my right hand move toward my gun, he done drew his pistol.
Pretty fast, huh?
Fast ain't exactly the word I'd use, Carl. More like goddamn lightning, I think. 1 second I was looking into his eyes, just as cold and black as a snake's, and the next thing, his hand was full of iron, and I was staring down the barrel of a Colt. And the thing is, I didn't even see his hand twitch. You know how when you're facing somebody and they're fixing to draw, you can usually see a twitch of their arm muscle or like a shift in their eyes before they hook and draw?
Jacoby nodded. He knew what Mac meant. There was almost always some telltale sign before a man committed himself in a gunfight. Knowing this and recognizing it was what gave professional gunfighters the edge in such contests.
Well, There was nothing about Jensen that even hinted he was going for his gun. One minute he was looking me in the eye just as natural as you please, and the next, he somehow got a gun in his hand stuck against my chest, and his eyes are as hard and black as flint.
And he didn't threaten you or hit you or anything like that after he drew his pistol and had the drop on you?
Who needs to threaten when you can draw a six killer like that?
But Matt, can't you see what I've been trying to tell you? Jensen ain't no cold-blooded killer. He had the drop on you in front of his friends. If he was a showboat or looking to impress him, he could have pistol-whipped you or even shot you down. Hell, in this town, no one would have blamed him. But he didn't.
No, he didn't. And you're right. There wasn't nothing I could do to stop him from doing whatever the hell he wanted to.
Maybe we better try and talk some sense into Sarah, or at least get her to hold off until we can figure out what we gotta do.
Hell, there ain't no need in worrying ourselves over that, Carl, my friend. Old man McDougal wants Jensen dead, and so does his daughter Sarah. As far as the two of them are concerned, once they made up their minds on something, it's as good as gold.
But maybe we can convince them that they're wrong about him.
You ever try to tell Sarah anything she don't want to hear, boy?
Yeah, I see what you mean. She's a mite stubborn at times.
No, Carl. A mule is mite stubborn. Sarah is full on all the goddamn time stubborn.
So what are we gonna do?
I guess we'd do like you say and at least try to make her see reason. Hell, worst she can do is chew our ears off.
Well, maybe if we get her to hold off for a while and to watch how Jensen operates around town, maybe she'll start to see that he ain't exactly the monster she thinks he is.
Well, I still think we're whistling in our hats, but like you say, it won't hurt to try and talk some reasoning to her. Though the words reason and woman don't ordinarily belong together.
Macklin headed on over to the cafe while Carl walked to the general store down the street. Once inside, he caught Sarah's eye, mouthed the words Sunset Cafe, and then left, hoping she'd understand that he needed to talk to her. Sarah joined him at the table after making sure that no one she knew was in the place. After the waitress had taken their orders and placed coffee for all of them on the table, Sarah spoke.
Now, what's all fired important that you wanted to meet me here in the middle of the day where everyone in town can see us together?
Well, I had a talk with Jensen today.
You what? What did you do, Mac?
Don't get upset, Sarah. I didn't tell him nothing. I just wanted to get a feeling for the feller, that's all.
And did you, Mac? Did you get a feeling for the man who killed my brother?
Yes, I did, Sarah, and, I don't think he did what everybody in Pueblo thinks he did.
You don't think he shot Johnny down?
I think he probably shot Johnny, but I don't think it was in cold blood or that he ambushed him. Jensen is just too damn fast to do that. In fact, he's plenty fast enough to have killed Johnny and all the others in a fair fight.
And just how did you determine this, Mac? Did you walk up to him and say, "By the way, Mr. Jensen, I sure like to see how fast you are on the draw. Could you oblige me and show me your moves?"
No, Sarah, I didn't do that. I just prodded him a little until he drew on me. That's when I saw how fast he was, and, well, believe me, it was plenty fast.
I don't believe this. Let me remind you of something you've evidently forgotten, Mac. You work for my dad, and he sent you here for one reason, and that is to kill Smoke Jensen or to guard my back while I do it. Isn't that right?
Yes, but I think Angus and you were both wrong about what happened that day. And if Jensen killed Johnny in a fair fight, which Johnny probably started, then I don't think Jensen should be killed for it.
Sarah slowly sipped her coffee, her eyes burning into Macklin's. After a moment, she turned her gaze to Jacoby.
Is this how you feel also, Carl?
Yeah, it is, Sarah. Now, we both looked into this before you got here, and everyone in this town thinks Jensen is as straight as an arrow. They don't have one bad thing to say about him, and no one in this town would ever believe he's a back shooter or an ambusher.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think you're both full of... well, hot air.
Sarah moved her hand away from Jacoby's, her lips tight.
This is going to take some thinking about. I'll send a wire to my dad and see what he thinks about all this. May have to ask him to send me some more help. Men who know their place and are loyal to him.
Be careful what you say in a telegram. Remember, everyone in this town knows Smoke Jensen.
Don't you worry about that, Mac. You got other things to be worried about, like what my daddy's gonna say when I tell him you've gone over to the other side.
Oh, Sarah.
Now get out of here, both of you. I've got some thinking to do.
Cletus Jones, Angus McDougal's foreman, stood in his office waiting to get the man's attention. Angus swiveled around in his leather high-back chair and regarded Cletus with raised eyebrows.
Who lit a fire under your saddle, boy?
I got this here message from Miss Sarah, boss. The telegraph man said it came in yesterday, but it was too late to get it out here by then.
Angus frowned, but he didn't say anything as he slit the envelope with a thumbnail and pulled out the telegram. At first, he'd been very angry at her for taking off after Smoke Jensen on her own without consulting him. But after thinking about it, he'd realized he would have expected a son to do it, and Sarah had always been as good as, and often better than, his son had been at managing the ranch. He smiled and opened up the folded yellow sheet of paper. After a moment spent reading it, he swiveled around and stared at the window, thinking. Cletus was bursting with curiosity to find out what Sarah had done about Smoke Jensen, but he knew better than to interrupt the old man while he was thinking. Even though Cletus had been with Angus McDougal since the early days, when they'd fought off Indians and rustlers and road agents together while founding the McDougal spread, and even though he was the kid's godfather, since they were pups, he'd never thought much of Johnny. He knew he was, and always had been, a spoiled brat. However, Cletus thought Sarah was one of the prettiest and nicest women folk he'd ever known. Hell, if he'd been 20 years younger and hadn't been like family to her, he'd have made her run at her himself. After a moment, Angus turned his chair back around, crumpling the paper in his fist.
Get your gear together and gather up the best 10 men you can find, Cletus. You're gonna take a little trip down to Big Rock.
When Cletus nodded, Angus turned back to his desk and picked up a pencil and paper.
And send little Jimmy in here. He's gonna need a ride to Pueblo and send my daughter an answer to her wire.
Boss, what do I tell the men we're going to Big Rock for?
Tell them you're gonna go down there and pick up a skunk and bring him back here for me to deal with.
Yes, sir.
3 days later, Days Macklin spent holed up in his hotel room lest he run into Smoke Jensen or one of his friends again. A bellboy knocked on the door to Jacoby's room and handed him a handwritten note.
Meet me at our usual dining place after the noon rush at 3:00. S.
Jacoby went to Macklin's room and showed him the note.
We've got about an hour till 3:00. That ought to give you time to get freshened up, I might.
Jacoby's friend had been in a funk ever since the day Jensen scared him half to death by drawing on him, and then Sarah had chewed his butt about going against his father's wishes.
Yeah, all right.
You gotta snap out of it, man. We got work to do.
Jacoby knew that Macklin was still ashamed that he hadn't had the courage to draw down on Jensen when he had the chance. He had tried to explain to him that it wouldn't have done any good and that the only result would have been that Mac would now be deader than yesterday's news. Still, his friend was not accustomed to backing down from anyone, least of all the man who'd killed his best friend and his boss's son.
That is, if I ain't been fired.
It was 3:05, and the Sunset Cafe was almost deserted when Macklin and Jacoby joined Sarah at their usual table in the rear. Jacoby was thankful that Macklin had shaved and washed up before the meeting. He didn't want Sarah to see how his friend had declined in mental attitude since his run-in with Smoke Jensen. Sarah placed a telegram on the table so they could both read it.
I agree fully with your idea, Stop. We'll send some men to help you round up stock and bring them back here to ranch for further examination and final determination of their disposition. End.
Well, just what does this mean, Sarah?
I telegrammed my father and told him I was having trouble rounding up the stock he was interested in and that I needed some more help and that the beeves should be transported to the ranch rather than being slaughtered here. You can see his reply for yourselves.
So what are you saying? Your dad's going to send some men up here to take Jensen prisoner and bring him back to the ranch in Puebla?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. I didn't figure the three of us would be able to get the drop on Jensen and get him all the way back to Pueblo by ourselves, especially considering the rather friendly feelings toward him you two have been showing.
Sarah, this is crazy. Kidnapping is a hanging offense.
So is murder, in case you've forgotten what he did to my brother. Besides, since both of you seem to have some notion that Jensen is not guilty where it comes to my brother's death, I would think that you'd be glad Daddy has consented to us bringing Jensen out to the ranch and letting him tell his side of it.
Jacoby and Macklin glanced at each other. They both knew that wasn't the reason old Angus McDougal wanted Jensen brought to him. It was more likely so the old man himself could have the pleasure of putting a bullet in Jensen. Or worse, torturing the poor son of a bitch. Knowing the old man as they did, they didn't figure he'd just shoot Jensen and be done with it without first causing the man a good deal of pain and humiliation. Angus had been around long enough to have fought Indians in the old days, and to hear him tell it, he'd learned some interesting ways to torture a man from them.
All right, let's say for the sake of argument that you're right. Just how do you think a gang of men is going to show up here in Big Rock and not bring a lot of attention to themselves so that when Jensen disappears, they are not suspected? Hell, they'd have a posse on our tails before we got 50 miles.
That's easy. They're not coming into town.
What?
That's right. Because you and Mac are going to ride out on the trail from Pueblo and camp out until the men get here. You tell them to wait out there until I can bring Jensen to them.
And just how in blazes do you expect to do that little trick?
Well, a woman's got her ways to get a man to do what she wants.
Bullcrap, Sarah. Jensen may be a lot of things, killer included, but I can tell you this. The man is no womanizer. He don't even look at other women. Ever.
Well, don't you worry, Mr. Smart Aleck. You just go out there and wait for the hands my daddy is sending. I'll get Jensen there one way or another, and I'll do it so it'll be a while before anyone knows he's missing.
Jacoby and Macklin looked at each other, both thinking that Sarah had gone round the bend. There was simply no way she could get the drop on a man like Smoke Jensen. No way at all. As they walked back to their hotel, Macklin shook his head.
Now I know I should have killed Jensen. Sarah's gonna mess around and get herself hurt or put in jail.
I think you underestimate Sarah, Mac. Remember, she's Angus McDougal's daughter, and she's always been twice as smart and four times as tough as a brother ever was.
Yeah, but Jensen's an experienced gunslinger, Carl, and he didn't get to be as old as he is by letting anyone, and that's girls included, get the drop on him. Hell, I couldn't even watch him in a crowded saloon without him knowing exactly what I was doing. Man has eyes in the back of his head and instincts like a mountain cougar.
You may be right, but I don't know what the hell we can do about it. Of course, you're more than welcome to go over there and tell Sarah she's full of beans and you think she ought to stick to cooking and such and leave the rough stuff to us real men if you want to.
No thank you, Carl, because I do relish my cojones. And Sarah sure as hell would rip them off if I ever suggested there was something Angus McDougal's daughter couldn't do as well as any man working for him.
As they walked up the stairs to their hotel room to get packed and do as Sarah had told them to, Jacoby glanced sideways at Macklin.
Tell you what, partner. I bet you $10 Sarah does get Jensen out there, and I'll give you 2-1 odds.
Nope. I learned a long time ago not to waste my money betting against McDougal, male or female. You got any idea how she's gonna do it, since we'll... Like you say, Jensen don't chase no skirts.
No, but knowing Sarah, I wouldn't put it past her just to walk up to him and pull a gun out of her purse and stick it in his face.
You really think so?
Hell, Mac, I don't know.
Predicting what a woman's gonna do is like predicting which way a frog's gonna jump. You're gonna be wrong at least half the time.
After Angus straightened him out on the real reason he was sending him to Big Rock, Cletus picked 10 of the toughest, meanest men they had working for him on the ranch. More than a few of them had once ridden the Owl Hoot Trail, and they knew their way around firearms. A couple had even spent time in the territorial prison for murder and mayhem. As the gang of men sat on their horses in front of his house, Angus addressed them from the front porch.
Each of you men will receive a healthy bonus for this work. In fact, I'll pay you 2 months' wages for what should only be a couple of weeks of easy work.
What if this man Jensen should give us some trouble or try to escape? You want us to shoot him if and that happens?
Should any of you take it upon himself to kill this man and deprive me of the pleasure of getting my hands on him, I will personally see that you experience what one of our bulls does when it is gelded. Do I make myself clear, Mr. Biggs?
Well, but what is...
No buts, Biggs. There are 11 of you, and you're meeting up with 3 more, including my daughter Sarah. That should be more than enough to keep Mr. Jensen under control. And if it's not, then God help you when I get through with you.
Later, on the trail, Biggs rode up next to Cletus, who was leading the group of men.
Cleet?
Yeah?
Did the boss tell you anything about this Jensen feller before he told you to go down to Big Rock and pick him up?
Cletus shook his head, not looking at Biggs directly. He didn't like the man and never had. If it weren't so hard to find hands who would stay at work through the brutal winters of Pueblo, he'd never have been hired.
No, Jason, he didn't. Why, do you know something?
Yeah, I heard of this Smoke Jensen when I was in the territorial prison a while back.
What'd you hear, Jason?
Cletus was curious about the man who'd shot Johnny. He'd heard the usual, that Jensen was pretty famous with a gun and that he'd once had some posters out on him, but that was about all he knew. He didn't get to town to listen to local gossip too often, being much too busy trying to keep the ranch going.
Well, first off, I heard he's rattlesnake quick with a shotgun. Well,
that don't surprise me none, since he somehow managed to shoot down Johnny and some of his friends. And Johnny was no slouch with a handgun either. Besides, there's plenty of men who are quick with a gun out here, Jason. This territory just seems to be a magnet for men who think they can make a living off their six shooters.
Jason smirked, realizing this was directed against him, since he'd been one of those men until he'd gotten caught and sent to prison.
Yeah, well, I also heard he's mean as a two-peckered billy goat if you cross him or any of his friends. I shared a cell with a man who tried to brace Jensen once in a saloon.
If this Jensen is so fast and so mean as you say, how come the man braced him and lived to tell about it?
Because Jensen didn't need to kill him. When my mate went for his gun, Jensen used his fists instead. He beat this guy so bad he's going to be eating through straw for the rest of his life. He not only knocked all of his teeth out, he broke his jaw so bad his gums don't even come together right. Poor some bitch is skinny as a rail, and he used to weigh over 200 pounds. And he has this kind of funny whistle when he tries to talk.
Cletus eyed Biggs. He'd never before seen Biggs give anyone the least amount of respect.
You sound like you're halfway afeard of this man, Jason.
I ain't scared of no man, Cleet.
Cletus wasn't fooled. He could see it in the man's eyes, lurking deep in him, like a sore that won't heal.
Well, then why are you telling me all this? We're being well paid to take this little trip.
A couple of months' pay ain't so much when you're dealing with a man like Jensen.
Well, like the boss says, 14 of us ought to be able to handle one man, Jason. But if you're so worried, then maybe you ought to turn your mount around and head on back to the ranch where it's safe.
13 men, Cleet, and the boss's little bitch who looks plenty good to play with in the hayloft but who ain't near as tough as the old man seems to think.
When Biggs jumped to his feet and grabbed for his gun, he found himself looking down the barrel of Cletus's big Walker Colt. Cletus wasn't known as a fast draw, but he'd been handling men like Biggs for more years than he cared to think about. And he knew most of them were cowards when they didn't have an edge.
You shouldn't ought to talk about Miss Sarah like that, Biggs. I don't much like it. And I hate to think of what the boss would do if and he happened to hear about it.
Biggs relaxed and let his hand move away from his pistol. He tried a grin, but there was little humor in it, and his eyes blazed with hate and humiliation. He wiped the blood off his lip with the back of his hand.
Oh, I was just funning with you, Cleet. I know you got a soft spot for the girl. I didn't mean nothing by what I said.
It ain't that way, Biggs. I knowed her since she was born, so watch your mouth when you're around me, you hear?
Yes, sir.
I mean it, Jason, or your friend from jail won't be the only one eating his meals through a straw.
Is it all right if I get back on my horse?
Cletus holstered his gun and leaned over in the saddle until his face was close to Biggs's.
Sure. Just don't go getting any ideas about putting a lead pill in my back, Biggs. Because I'm going to tell the other men if that happens to string you up to the nearest tree. You get my drift?
Come on, Cleet. You know we've always been friends, even if I do let my mouth override my ass every once in a while.
No harm, then. As long as you keep your thoughts about Miss Sarah to yourself.
Cletus jerked his horse's head around and proceeded on up the trail, while the other members of the group looked from him to Biggs, unsure of how to take this altercation. Behind him, Biggs rode along, keeping his face bland, but his teeth were so tightly clenched together it made his jaws creak. If Cletus could have read his mind, he wouldn't have been so cavalier about turning his back on the ex-prisoner and murderer. Just outside the city limits of Big Rock, on the trail to Pueblo and points north, Carl Jacoby and Daniel Macklin were having some trouble. The late fall temperatures had begun to drop, and there was even the smell of snow in the air, though it was early in the year for that. They'd stopped at the general store and brought provisions for their camp, while Sarah pretended not to know them as she waited on them with Peg Jackson working nearby. Along with foodstuffs, they'd bought a couple of small one-man tents that would keep the worst of the weather off them, though the thin oilcloth of the tent's walls would do little to keep them warm in the dropping temperatures. Working as ranch hands and cowboys for many years, they were both experienced in camping out under the stars, but neither particularly enjoyed it, having become accustomed to the niceties of bunkhouse living over the past few years working for Angus McDougal. They'd also become quite accustomed to having a camp cook make their meals for them, so neither was particularly looking forward to doing his own cooking. Jacoby gathered some hat-sized stones and made a circle in the middle of their camp, which they'd placed on a hill overlooking the trail a quarter of a mile below them. There were some maple and oak trees and a small copse nearby that would help keep the worst of the wind off of them, but it was clear that it was going to be a cold night nevertheless. Macklin squatted next to the stones as Jacoby put a match to some moss and dry leaves to get the fire going.
How long you reckon for the men from the ranch get here?
Who knows? If they left the same time Angus sent the wire on, they could be here as early as tomorrow morning, but that's unlikely. They'd have to get provisioned up and all, so I don't really expect them for another couple days.
Oh, damn. That means we're gonna sit out here freezing our balls off for two or three more days?
That's about the size of it.
Well, I should have taken my chances with Jensen and drawn down on him when I had the chance.
Then you wouldn't be here freezing your balls off, Mac. You'd be planted forked end up in Boot Hill being food for the worms.
Well, hell, maybe not. Maybe I could have taken him.
Yeah, and maybe pigs can fly, too.
Carl, why do you think a man like Jensen would trouble himself with a nobody like Johnny McDougal? Hell, ain't like he was gonna get more famous for killing him.
You ever think maybe Jensen didn't have no choice in the matter, Mac? That just maybe Johnny pushed the man too far and had to pay the price for it?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, just that the man with Jensen claimed that they acted in self-defense. That Johnny got pissed off when one of Jensen's party beat the crap out of him, that he drew down and fired on him without giving him no warning.
Yeah, I could see it happening. If Johnny had a snoot full of liquor and was acting the big man like he usually did when he was drunk and showing off in front of the boys, you try telling that little story to his sister, Sarah?
No. She wouldn't listen to anything bad about Johnny. Her and the old man both always turned a blind eye to his shortcomings, though we certainly had plenty of them.
Maybe that's why he's dead. Vangus would have kicked his ass a few times when he was growing up instead of letting him get away with being a horse's ass. Maybe he'd have learned to keep his damn mouth shut.
I thought you was his best friend.
Well, I was, but that don't mean I didn't see how dumb he could be sometimes. Hell, my old pappy used to take a razor strap to me if I ever got out of line, and I soon learned to keep my mouth shut if and I didn't have something worthwhile to say.
I'm gonna get those tents ready. Why don't you fry us up some fat back and beans so we can eat before it gets too late?
Well, I want to know who elected me the cook of this little expedition.
Hey, it don't make no never mind of me. You can set up a tent and I'll cook if you want.
No, that's all right. You do the tents and I'll do the cooking.